Hello and welcome to Coin Talk. I am Aaron Lammer. I am so sorry that we missed you last week. We were bound to miss an episode eventually, but thanks to everyone for bearing with us. I was on the road last week. This week, Jay is on the road, but thankfully he is on the line from an undisclosed location. Do you want to disclose your location, Jay?
No. But I also just feel like the place I actually am is so unremarkable that disclosing it is almost embarrassing.
Have you read Pale Fire by Nabokov?
Yeah, of course. I mean, not of course. I feel like that was very pretentious, but yes, I have read it.
I feel like, you know, he's like writing the whole book in that like motel.
Yes.
That's basically where I perceive you are right now. You're holed up in some motel, scribbling paranoid fantasies down on the page.
I mean, that would actually be much more glamorous and fun than the reality right now. But thank you. It's good to be compared to Charles Kimboat, I guess.
Before we forget, I just want to say thanks to our partners over at Medium. They've got a really great collection of new crypto writing. If you're enjoying it, become a member. It's $5 a month. You can find us at medium.com/cointalk. That's all the transcripts. There's all kinds of stuff at me.dm/crypto. And the collection, I forget the URL. Jay, I don't even know what the URL for that special collection is.
me.dm/crypto, right?
Well, no, that's their always collection. They have a special collection of 11 articles.
Oh, well, look, you can click. I bet that there is a link on me.dm.crypto that you should click.
You can figure it out. People can figure it out. Okay, let's play the music.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, October 2nd at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $6,500.
Okay, here we are. 2 weeks have passed. Jay may or may not be visiting Harry Potter World.
What is Harry Potter World? Is that like a ride at Disney World or something like that?
No, it's an entire amusement park in Orlando.
Oh, really?
You could be there now instead of taping this podcast.
I don't think it's open at 7:30. I just to divulge, I am in Orlando, and I am staying near the airport. And I'm here for a reporting trip. And I got to say, Aaron, like, you know, I am somebody who travels quite a bit for work. And my work of reporting generally takes me to places that are not like the glamour cities of America. And
you self-identify as a rambling man.
It has installed in me, I would say, a great tolerance for a lot of America's shat-on cities. Like, I try and find something worthwhile or else you just go crazy.
Yeah, you're in one of the most shat-on cities in America right now.
Yeah. So, like, when I was in Oklahoma City for basically 2 weeks, like, I found really good things. And in the end, I liked Oklahoma City. But I got to say, Orlando is fucking terrible.
Well, you say that, but you haven't been to Harry Potter World yet.
That's true.
Now, let me ask you, I think this actually is an important question for all crypto buyers, which is which school within which school within Hogwarts would you declare for there? Do you see yourself as a Hufflepuff?
I gotta be honest, I have never read the books, and I saw the first movie, and that's it. I don't know.
Jay,
I know that one of them is called.
I thought you were a literary man.
I know one is like Gryffindor, and the evil one is Slytherin, right? But I only know that through like pop culture, like osmosis.
Next Coin Talk book club is apparently going to have to be Harry Potter book two.
Definitely not. I haven't read book one. So, but I did see the movie, which if I remember right, isn't the first movie like books one and two? So maybe I should start on three.
No, I think it's just one because it's like one school year for each one. I don't want to give anything away. I'll move on. Come back to it. You probably don't want to go to the amusement park until you're at least halfway through the series. I guess you're probably going to catch it when your daughter is of the age anyway, so maybe it's a waste to read it now.
Yeah, I actually considered bringing her down here because, you know, when you're on a reporting trip, the hotel and everything is paid for. But I just like, first of all, I mean, I couldn't go, so my wife would have to take her by herself, but she's, I don't think she's really ready for the whole Disney experience or even the SeaWorld experience. And I think, like, generally her time is about 45 minutes before she can't stand a place anymore. And so I just didn't think it was worthwhile. But yes, I think for both of us in the next 4 years or so, we will probably be both back down in Orlando.
I like how I like how we've both been doxing our locations. I feel like it's part of our crypto moderate stance.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Where we're just like, I'm in Orlando.
Yeah, yeah.
By the airport.
Come steal
Come
my
and get
Bitcoins.
Me if you got a problem. Yeah.
If you want to kidnap me for
better come all the way down to Orlando
for 0.07 BTC, please go for it. Yeah.
Okay, so it's been a couple weeks, a lot of Bitcoin news, a lot of crypto news. I don't know if we're distinguishing those things or what, but should we just try and fire through as many of these things as we can?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's one thing that really did kind of interest me this over the past couple of weeks. I think this happened when you were in Spain, which is that there was a Bitcoin bug, and it made a lot of crypto news, but it really didn't really make that much of the sort of mainstream news. I have a theory about that, and I wanted to run it by you, like a journalism.
Well, I'm interested
a journalism
in your theory.
Okay, so,
I'll tell you about how I heard about this bug just before you give me your journalism theory, which was I was walking the Camino Santiago, which meant I only had Wi-Fi at the inns.
Yeah,
and just as I was leaving at like 6 a.m. and it was dark out, I got like a like push Twitter thing that was like, bug discovered in Bitcoin could affect 80%. I was like, oh, guess I lost all my money and I don't have the Wi-Fi to investigate this any further.
Are the people that you're walking the Spanish roads with, were they Bitcoin people?
There were some coiners and there were some no coiners.
Okay. Like did they
and I will say yes, it did come up a lot.
Okay. So it was not heavy. I would think that if I was a no coiner and I was walking if I was doing this once in a lifetime trip to walk across parts of Spain, that the last thing I would want to talk about is Bitcoin. It's kind of like hearing about somebody's fantasy team if you like don't like sports, I think.
I'll say this. There's a lot of free time. You're walking 100 miles with the same group of people, Bitcoin comes up like once every 90 minutes.
That sounds not great. Okay, so the Bitcoin bug was a... And look, if you are really into crypto and you're listening to this, you already know, but just to recap, it was a sort of security flaw that Bitcoin Core was dealing with that they were just alerted with. And the implication of it was that if it wasn't patched and it wasn't closed, then anybody could have sort of accessed it and exploited the vulnerability and printed as many Bitcoins as they wanted. So like instead
yeah,
of having...
And this doesn't even just affect Bitcoin. This would be pretty much everything that forked itself off of Bitcoin.
Yeah, so anything so that used the Bitcoin code. Yeah.
The entire family tree of Bitcoin.
And so,
yeah, it's pretty, it would be, I think we could agree that if this were to happen in full, this would be the end.
It would be the end.
On some level.
Yeah.
Or they'd have to, more realistically, they would have to wheel Bitcoin back and the whole myth of decentralization would end and probably the price would crater and it would be very bad.
I mean, I think it would have been close to fatal because the one thing that has been keeping Bitcoin, I think the mystique and sort of the intrigue around is that these types of things don't happen very much, you know, and that for the most part, it really is seen as being something that hasn't had any major failures since it launched, you know, out of like Satoshi's Caribbean, you know, cabana. 10 years ago. So this would have been a disaster. But let's go back to my journalism theory, which is that I think the reason why this wasn't covered that much is because I actually think that crypto, like, you know how sort of journalism works, right? Which is that these places, like whether the Times or BuzzFeed.
George Soros sends the check.
Yeah. That's the global level, right? I'm talking about the George Soros worker bees.
You're talking about the local
level.
Yeah.
Okay. So amongst the bees, the Soros bees, they assign pieces a little bit ahead of schedule, right? So they are trying to anticipate what the market is going to be and what the interest level is going to be. And I think at the point, like maybe 6 months ago, maybe a little bit longer, that a lot of people banked a lot of anti-Bitcoin stories because, you know, the media is generally no-coiner media. And I think that they're basically just releasing those on an auto schedule and they have stopped paying attention to crypto because the stories that we read in mainstream media outlets are all kind of, they're all reported, they're all pretty good, they're all negative uniformly, but they don't feel particularly timely or relevant to this market. And I think that what's happened is just that, like, because there's so little interest in Bitcoin compared to what there was last year around Christmas time, that I just think people aren't really paying attention. But this should have been a huge story, I think, because it wasn't just the fact that this was a near fatal, potentially fatal bug. It was that Bitcoin Core really sort of revealed itself to be a real centralized power here because they were the ones that had to patch it. They also withheld information from the public after they first announced that there was some sort of problem. They didn't tell everyone how bad the problem was. And then they had to go around and basically go on Reddit, go on Twitter, go in any type of thing and tell anyone who had downloaded the Bitcoin Core software, which is a lot of people, that they have to update it and put in the patch or else like the whole thing can crumble. Because it really only takes one person creating a vulnerability to do something that fucks this whole thing up. You know, like if
it's not one person, like it's not like one person can individually fuck it up, but if the entire if the ecosystem is not thoroughly patched for the most part, then it's vulnerable at least until that patch happens. And I think you're right to cite it's difficult like to get everyone to patch things without being a dictator.
Yeah.
Like this is a problem that is dealt with, let's say, in the world of iOS software by being like, this is a mandatory upgrade. You can no longer use this app until you upgrade it. And it's actually pretty seamless in situations like that. You just put a hard, it's like called a kill switch. And the kill switch says, like, I'm no longer going to connect until this is updated. And this is one of those like problems that exists in decentralization land that, yeah, I seriously thought for a minute, maybe this is it.
Really?
Like,
it was that bad.
Well, I feel like there's like a little bit of an element in crypto of not with a bang, but with a whimper.
Sure.
Where like we've always said, if it all goes down in flames, it's not going to be what we expected. Like it's not going to be like the FBI raiding a bunch of Bitcoin exchanges. It's probably going to be something weird and off-brand
that nobody knew
like
about.
This.
Yeah. But
yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like, I think it's also a little bit like of our human nature to imagine operatic outcomes and not like simple code-based outcomes, that this is all pretty uncharted territory. But, you know, to their credit, they did fix it. And in the same week, there was the biggest breach in Facebook history.
Well, I don't know.
So
did they fix it? Do we know? I mean, I don't think that we can say that it is definitely fixed, given the fact that
I agree with
misinformation
that
on their end. I mean,
it seems like we're out of the most dangerous zone around it. And I will say also, I was shocked and I'm surprised. I wonder what your take is on this. I fully expected when I got to the next inn and I immediately pull refreshed Blockfolio that we were going to be, you know, talking about at least a 5 or 10% hit. Just the knowledge that this could happen, even if it wasn't a full catastrophe, just seemed like it was a pretty bad beat for the market. Nothing happened.
Well,
I have a
question then. Do you feel like, are you fully confident that this can't be replicated? I mean, like if this was a problem that they didn't know about, there might be other problems they don't know about, right?
I think it would be fair to say in the full Rumsfeldian unknown unknowns, that there are other problems in Bitcoin that we don't know about yet.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I would say that is a known unknown, right? That they're most likely.
I think exactly. That's a known unknown. So I think if we had thought hard intellectually about this, we would have said, yes, that these things are looming out there. But think our theme today, can I set a theme and an intention for us, Jay? So I think the theme is stability. And the final question I want to ask for our final segment today is Bitcoin stable? And if so, or if not, what would stability look like? And this event made me think about how if Bitcoin is stable, let's say I could guarantee you, hey, Bitcoin's probably going to be worth within a fact, you know, up or down a few percent the same next year. Okay, that's like not a terrible thing to imagine. But knowing that there might be this landmine sitting out in the water, I don't know how much I'd want to hang around with stable Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, stable Bitcoin, if all we think about it is not as you and I being Bitcoin moderates, but also gamblers who have get-rich-quick impulses, Bitcoin is not a great get-rich-quick investment. You know, I don't even know if it's a good stable investment.
Well, it's clearly not a great get-rich-quick investment if we assume it's stable. But stable investments are generally okay. A stable investment in the stock market could be a blue chip stock that's never going to appreciate rapidly in a year, but is not risky. Bitcoin, even outside of its own stability, is risky.
Yeah. I don't think that there's any corollary between Bitcoin and any big U.S. corporation that you can invest in. I mean, or blue chip large cap stock. It certainly is way more volatile because nobody really knows what's going on with it. I will say that, you know, this bug did frighten me a little bit more than I expected. I mean, partially because I think that the fact that there are a lot of shit coins that are built that just basically copy and pasted part of the Bitcoin code, you know? And all of those are also vulnerable. And today, like about a few hours ago, one of those shit coins was exploited. It was called Pigeon Coin, which I didn't know existed, but I actually kind of like the name. But somebody within Pigeon Coin printed out 235 million Pigeon Coins using this exploit, you know, because the people who were running Pigeon Coin, who, you know, may or may not exist anymore, they didn't patch it up. And so that is worth about $15,000. And so, I mean, you know, I do wonder if these types of vulnerabilities, there must be people who are looking for them, not only in Bitcoin, but also maybe in some of the larger alt markets as well. And I just think it's going to keep happening. I mean, everything expanded so quickly. There are so many projects that were not made in good faith, you know? And I feel like this type of fraud and this type of, you know, like hacking is just going to continue. And I don't want to be Mr. Negative, because the thing I'll say to that is that I feel like you should have known that if you wanted to get into crypto. But
We should have known better.
Yeah, but at the same time, I will say that, I don't think it is disputable that these types of things will keep happening. You know, I don't think that anybody who goes out and says we fix this thing and nothing bad is going to happen again at this level, I mean, I think they're either delusional or they're lying, you know? And so it does factor in a lot more risk, especially, you know, if it is not counterbalanced by possibility of meteoric Bitcoin. Now, if you're a Bitcoin maximalist and you're in this for the philosophy, or if you're in it for, or like the community or any of those things, then you shouldn't care, you know, because you can see it as an evolving project. But
even if you care about the community, if the whole 5 years of community you've invested gets wiped out in a buck, at very least it's a bummer. You know, it's at very least it sucks.
Yeah, it definitely sucks.
So the other thing that it made me think a little bit about is we have this idea of holding your private keys, where usually it's like, usually if something bad happens, it's like, well, you should have held your private keys.
Yeah.
You had your stuff on the exchange, right? That's what happens with these exchange hacks. What's happening here is an event that could destroy the value of a coin while you still hold your coins.
Yeah.
So I think this idea that, like, if you, like, live on, like, a desert, entirely meat-based diet island and never deal in anything but Bitcoin, that you're sort of walled off from the problems of Bitcoin, I don't really buy that. I mean, it's sort of the same way that Saif Amous would say no one's immune to Bitcoin. Like, your currency is going to sink against Bitcoin. Simultaneously, no one's immune to Bitcoin bugs.
Okay, but like, it is true. That is true. But that is also saying, like, you know, if you drive around like a safety approved Volvo tank, you can still die, right? So you might as well just drive a motorcycle around. I mean,
no.
There are different levels of risk. So
what I'm saying is just that there's no walling yourself off from the risk of Bitcoin collapsing.
Oh yeah, of course.
And a Bitcoin collapse would take down all of crypto. So even the person who's doing everything perfect is vulnerable.
Yeah.
There is no person who's like approach to crypto is completely without vulnerabilities. And did you see this big Facebook hack this week?
Yeah.
So Facebook lost like 50 million accounts, the worst breach in Facebook history. It's kind of a big deal, I guess. Although for the most part, they're just kind of like, sorry, reset your passwords. Like, if the people who are trying to protect Facebook can't do it perfectly, I'm going to assume that Bitcoin Core also can't do it perfectly. I know they're different pursuits, but let's just say people who are excellent at their job, there's always flaws. There's such a different amount of risk when you're just talking about identifying data about people and their passwords versus their money.
Yeah. So what are you saying here, Aaron? Are you out? Are you out of crypto?
Not. I can't get out now, Jay. We need a little run here. Come on. All right. Well, speaking of runs, I don't know if you caught Joe Weisenthal's article for Bloomberg, but
I did.
He wrote an article about the overlap between the weed boom and the crypto boom, included a quote from your co-host Truly over here. So thanks to him for really shilling me as an expert in both fields when I am actually not one in either.
Did you get did it say host of CoinTalk?
I think he hosts podcasts on both topics like that. Yeah. I don't know if they show.
Come on, Joe, get that name in there.
Jay, I encouraged him to show.
Get the subscribe link into Bloomberg.
Well, as long as I'm shilling, I will say everyone should subscribe to my other podcast, Stoner, which is about creative people and the relationship to marijuana. It actually has nothing to do with weed penny stocks, which is a shame, because if it was about weed penny stocks, I probably would have bought some, and they went fucking crazy last week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jay, were you still in the game at this point? I can't remember how your weed penny stock bags were holding up.
I have one weed penny stock that I had a lot of shares in, but not for that much money. But, you know, like, let's say it was like, I don't know, it wasn't that much money. But
you maximized the amount of shares you could get for the least amount of money.
Exactly.
That's your investment
hypothesis. It was like buying Ripple. I was like, what can I buy most of for them? Yeah.
So far, I like it.
It was like Ripple times, like, I would say, I think it was probably like 3,000. If you say Ripple is a dollar, it was like each share was like 3,000% less than Ripple. I that stock went down 96% or something like that while I was holding it, and it did not recover at all. I think the company is probably dead. So I did not hold any weed penny stocks that went crazy, which is too bad because, you know, weed penny stocks really were something that I was very interested in, being like this speculative
person. You were the first person who was trying to get me into weed penny stocks, and I'm sorry I said no. Although, as I understand it, and I'll admit I didn't follow this run that closely because I didn't have any skin in the game, but it wasn't the penny stocks that were really going so crazy, but as the quasi-legitimate Canadian exchange stocks. I think the big one is Tilray, which owns a bunch of subsidiary companies that you've probably heard of, I think. So what do we make of this? What do we make of this big crypto run followed by a big weed run?
I think a few things it probably points to. One is that I think that young people are uninterested in investing in traditional ways. And I think that there's many reasons for that. The first is that there's so much more sources of information out there right now, which is a very banal thing to say, but it is true.
Yep.
And so, like, when you and I were growing up, if you and I, either of us had any money in our 20s, which I don't know about you, but I certainly didn't. I assume you didn't either.
I didn't even have a bathroom in my apartment in my 20s. Yeah.
I barely had a bathroom. I lived in many apartments without a kitchen, though. That if we had had money in, like, let's say, like, 2002, 2003 to invest money, right, that we would have probably been pushed into thinking that, like, a stock like Apple or something like that was very, very risky, and that, you know, all of our investments would be in stuff like GE, GM, most likely, like, some sort of mutual fund, right? And I think that partly was because there wasn't that, you know, it was similar to TV, how there, you know, when there weren't that many channels, but everyone just watches the same thing. I think that now that everybody can sort of figure out how to invest in these weird OTC markets, that more people are doing so. Same with crypto, it's just a lot easier. But the other thing is, you know, and I think that this is also a sort of banal point that's said about young people all the time, but also is true, which is that, you know, they don't have any promise of stability at all. And so their impulse, I think, is closer to the impulse that you and I just have because we have a mental illness, you know? Like, they're doing it out of
You're saying we're like millennials because we like gambling.
Yeah, but for millennials, it makes more sense because you and I, it makes no sense. We have, like, families.
I agree. But, like, if I was writing a cultural history of this, I would also say, like, they came of age in the, like, great boom in fantasy sports.
Yeah, for sure. I think that all that sort of, and video games, you know, all this stuff becomes normalized. Video games. So, like,
well, as I've said, the biggest cultural forces in the world are weed, rap, and video games.
Sure, I actually agree with that. Yeah,
and crypto is like their shitty cousin.
who's like kind of related to all of them.
the crypto mining rig, like, sits on top of the, like, slightly broken video game.
Yeah, that's true.
System.
That's true. I bought a gaming PC, like a high end, like not a high end, but like a high powered gaming PC.
Oh my god. Does it have like crazy lights and stuff that? Yeah. Is it a real garish?
Like, my wife is trying to buy a screen, like, for our room because my gaming computer is in our bedroom, and she was like, I'm gonna buy a Japanese screen so I can, like, block off all those stupid lights that are coming out of your computer.
It does seem like there's all these weird coincidences and overlaps in the world, like crypto mining and, like, high-end gaming chips coming of age at the same time.
One goes with the other, but, like, The only reason I mention it is because I now have a high powered GPU that could be employed for.
Okay, well, I'm gonna say let's fire that up and, like, at least catch a little background Monero. Here's what I think about the weed and crypto run. I don't really know. As I said, like, while I do host a podcast about weed, it is not about investing. The main thing I told Joe Weisenthal was, these crypto stocks remind me of shit coins because I actually do follow, like, weed brands a little bit. Like, if I go to a dispensary, I kind of know it's for sale. And the stuff that's available on the stock market has no relation to the saleable products you can get in legalization states. Like, this is a purely speculative market of people trying to build big medical conglomerates out of thin air. It's a ton of smoke and mirrors. And the main thing that this run made me think is maybe people got a little bored of crypto and are moving on to other speculative markets that are also fun. Like, crypto kind of, for me, invented gamified investing, or didn't invent it. It took it to another step further in terms of just being purely nonsense speculation, but it doesn't have any sort of a patent on that kind of behavior. Like, that whole shitcoin market could just become the weed shitcoin market and no one would blink and nothing would change very much.
Yeah, look, if I am, you know, being like a empiricist and the type of person who points out that,
please only bring Socratic logic I don't want to hear any relativism at all.
Okay, thank you. I would say that you know, speculative investing has been around in America for a long time, and that we've seen it in both tech booms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I will say that it generally frustrates me having conversations with people when they do this, you know, where they just point out that there's something else that is similar in the past, and therefore we shouldn't talk about the new crazy thing that's happening. I think that media people do that a lot because it is a way to sound both knowledgeable and smart. And so I'm not going to do that to you, even though, you know, obviously there were other things. And I'm going to focus on what I think your point was, which was that it sort of made everything into the realm of the absurd in a way that made it, that was far beyond the tech market, you know?
Yeah.
That, like, people were literally, like, you and I who are, you know, we do have, you know, gambling problems. But we were speculating based on logos and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, people were just buying and selling this
stuff
like crazy.
I don't know why you're talking about this in past tense. I still have Sumo Coin.
Yeah.
Although the reason I don't have any of this weed stuff is because I didn't get out of shit coins. But I will say, and I think you've captured my argument correctly, the blockchain isn't that cool. Like, if I can get a similar thrill of gambling on weed or the blockchain, it's not like all this blockchain stuff is just, it's so fun to innovate cross-border bank transfers that I just can't stop being involved in it.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, and just to take it further, like, for example, like, if you could, like, take all these SoundCloud rappers and you could buy shares in them, try, you know, you get some portion of their future earnings and, you know, yeah, it's just speculating. Don't you feel like that would also be like a huge market that would be way more fun than crypto?
I think you joke, you kid with me.
No, but I'm not kidding.
I think that's
I
a little bit where we're going. I think we're a little bit going. Like, let's look at what this weed thing really is. It's individual consumers getting really, really early access to a market that could be huge and also could be a total bust. And generally in American history, everyone else gets a
Wait, why do you think it could be a why do you think it could be a total bust? Like, I think these stocks likely will bust, but I don't think that the market will bust.
Well, here's what I think, and I'm arguing against my own beliefs here, but it's just like Bitcoin in that the regulatory response is strongly going to define price over the next few years. So as long as Jeff Sessions is the Attorney General of this country, I believe that weed is not going to achieve its full potential.
Yeah, but look, it's not like crypto.
That said, it's priced in, and Trump keeps like shit-talking Jeff Sessions, and every time he does, I should just go all in on weed stocks right now. Because the minute that Jeff Sessions is gone, it's going to go way up. And I agree with you, it's probably going to work. But there is a way in which weed doesn't work. Like, it's not a 100% hole in one.
I think it is the closest thing to 100% that some market will exist that will be massive. I mean, people are going to smoke weed, and
but it's like Ripple, where it's like already been the mania has already rallied several times. So it's not like you're buying in at like no one believes in weed.
Oh, sure.
You're buying in at like pretty deep speculation already. Particularly if you buy it after that run.
I'm comparing it to crypto. Like there is a decent chance that Bitcoin does not exist in 15 years. You know, there is zero chance that a weed market of some sort does not exist.
No, it's true.
Across the world.
At the end of the day, you can put weed in your pipe and smoke it. The blockchain has no value.
Wow, this is. I gotta say, this is the most this is the most negative that I've ever heard you on this podcast about crypto.
I'm just salty about how I missed the weed boom because I was stuck over here
and you're blaming
jerk off
crypto?
Shitcoin land. Yeah, I blame crypto.
You're like looking
getting,
at your shitcoin,
getting my eye off the prize.
Like, oh my god, yeah. If it wasn't for you guys, I would be.
I only have so much dumb money, and clearly I was interested in putting dumb money into weed because I started a podcast on the topic. But it happened to occur during the like tail end of a bear market when I couldn't exit crypto and still can't. And if I had money, I would put it into weed. I still think that weed's probably a good buy.
Should we just do that? Should we just take the rest of both of our crypto holdings and just buy penny weed stocks and then turn this into a penny weed stock podcast?
I was looking at the Augur odds on Jeff Sessions. And Jeff Sessions is less than 50% to make it to the end of the Trump term.
That's his predicted.
And yeah. And I mean, you can see why based on the way he's being treated within the Trump administration. So I feel like this is a 2x potential the minute he resigns for the weed market. I mean, we just saw it go crazy on basically no news.
I mean,
should we be?
I don't know if that's necessarily, if that's going to be a sustained rise, because I don't know how much these markets are stagnating, especially speculatively, based on this Jeff Sessions thing. Because I think what most people assume, and I think correctly, is that, you know, Jeff Sessions can't be the Attorney General of America forever, you know, and most likely he will be less than the next 2 years. And so I think that maybe some of the sort of price spike that might happen when he's gone is probably already baked in, because, like, it's not like this is an intractable situation. Like, somebody
it's,
who
it's
is
possible that that's true. But I just think based on the fact that it's now in the, like, crypto bull run, like, mania narrative story where people just saw it spike a bunch here, I would expect we have a few more of those to go before we reach whatever the top is. But I mean, I think there's an argument. So let's talk about this. Should we just split the difference and be like buying Potcoin or whatever?
Definitely not. But okay, one thing I would say is that, I mean, I think that if you and I just wanted to keep the same speculative risk, that you shouldn't just think, hey, I'm way too deep into crypto and it's too down for me to sell it. You know, there's some of these coins, there's no chance that they're going to recover. And if you are down 80% and you have $2 from 10 left, it's better to put that $2 into, you know, penny weed stocks. This is terrible advice, by the way. Not
well,
investment
but
advice.
I'm not, like, really holding that many of my, like worst bags. I'm basically just sitting here waiting for Bitcoin and Ethereum to recover. Mostly Ethereum. Like, if I see Ethereum $500, I'm happy.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I do think it's going to
happen. That would be a doubling from here, right?
Like, in the next year, I expect that to happen.
Okay. I'm going to bet that it won't happen.
I mean, it's going to happen or Ethereum's dead. I mean, like, Ethereum has got to recover to some extent.
Why does it have to go to 500? I mean, you know, that...
Well, I mean, that's still... 500 would still be, like, flat for, like, the last 6 months or something. Let's talk a little about that. Let's actually... So, I was just poking around at Bitcoin. Some Bitcoin charts here. What do you think Bitcoin has done over the last 3 months?
Last 3 months? I don't know. It went up to like...
It's minus 3% over the last 3 months.
Yeah, but it went up and went down and went up.
It went up and down. No, this is sort of my point. And over the last 6 months, it's minus 7%. Okay. So if you ignore the like roller coaster that's happening to produce that, everyone previously was saying, like, well, maybe I'll like buy some Bitcoin when it's stable. How can anyone possibly invest in this while it's so volatile? If not this, what would stable Bitcoin really look like? Like, is this stable Bitcoin we're talking about? And my argument for Ethereum, why I do think we will see $500, is simply that would just be Ethereum recovering some of its ground against Bitcoin while Bitcoin has been relatively flat. So I would think that Ethereum eventually has to make a move here or become a more obscure coin. Whereas Bitcoin, this has not really happened before, at least in the run of the show, where we're talking, like, I was just like listening to an old episode and the price was like within $20 of the price right now.
Yeah, but first of all, it has happened in Bitcoin historically, right? Like, there were 1.5
Yeah, there were some
markets.
Protracted flat periods, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't really think that your logic is particularly sound, Aaron. Like, I don't think that Ethereum has to gain back against Bitcoin here. Like, you know, like, there's no, you know, like, it just seems like it could just go down, you know, or it could just stay here. Like, those are
what
also
has
two
fundamentally
options.
Changed about Bitcoin and Ethereum, I guess, would be my question. Like, how has the situation materially changed?
Well, I mean, the whole thing was based on speculation and frenzy, the bull run, and that's all gone now. So that is a fundamental change.
Right, but does that explain, like, a shift between Bitcoin and Ethereum, that that Ethereum would lose a third to half of its value against Bitcoin?
Oh, sure, of course, yeah, because I think that part of the Ethereum speculation was based on the fact that people were bored with Bitcoin, but also because I think there was a narrative out there amongst retail investors, you know, which was best exemplified by the fact that, like, I was out late one night, and, you know, I'm never out late, but I was around NYU talking to a friend, and we were talking about Bitcoin, and this like drunk NYU dude walks by and he's like, "No, dude, Ethereum," you know? there was a lot of that, you know?
I like how you're Thomas Friedman. Thomas Friedman, like talks to the cab driver. You talk to the, like, dude, like, drunk, buying a piece of pizza.
Yeah, the NYU bro. Exactly. The only barometer I have in my entire journalistic career is talking to drunk NYU bro. So, like, that's
okay,
basically
okay.
My...
Okay, let me reframe the question then. If you don't think this is stability, what would stability look like? Like, we talk about Bitcoin reaching this second stage.
No, I agree with you. I think that this is, like, relative stability, but I don't think that the stability is meaningful because I don't think that it has proven itself to be something like, you know, like old General Motors stock or, like, Philip Morris or whatever, or like RJR Nabisco, where these are massive blue-chip companies where the stock itself is, you know, there's the assumption that it's always going to appreciate, even if it appreciates slowly. Like, I don't know, you've read Barbarians at the Gate, right?
Yeah. Well, the way I look at it is, I think we've established something of a floor. Obviously, I could be wrong, but listen to our last episode in which myself and Mike Novogratz collectively, without call a bottom.
Yeah.
It's always safe to call a bottom.
Yeah.
Like, that's like me saying, like, I'm not going to eat anymore tonight. That's like, I'm calling a moratorium on eating, but not the moratorium on eating.
True.
And I still might eat more. So we've got this bottom under us, right?
Yeah.
And it also seems like we've exhausted the interest in mania-type buying. There doesn't seem to be, like, a huge swell of people who are like, I'll buy Bitcoin at any price. We have none of that feeling we had before where it was like, if you don't buy it now, it's probably going to be double next month.
Oh, yeah.
Does anyone think that right now?
Good Lord, no.
So it almost feels like one of those like situations, like, did you play chess?
No.
You know, it feels like a little like one of those situations where it's like easy to defend, but it's very hard to attack. Like, there isn't an easy way out of this price that I see.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Which is a kind of a weird, like, pants on backwards way to achieve stability.
But it also could go down, Aaron. Like, you know,
I could. I thought it would when a massive bug was discovered. Like, I thought a piece of bad news would be the thing that would really, like, cause that floor to be tested. What did you think?
I mean, I don't know at this point what would cause the price to go up or down, but it does seem like I agree with you in the sense that it is hard to envision a scenario in which it moonshots again in the near future. Because, like, do you really, like, in our basement tapes, but also in the first episodes that we were taping, like, we would go through Twitter, we would go through Reddit, we would read... you know, more mainstream economists and people who are bullish on Bitcoin. And every single one of them had a scenario as to why this thing was going to be the entire future, whether it was blockchain technology or whether it was, the you know, just Bitcoin speculation.
And very few of those narratives have actually been invalidated at this point.
No, I agree with that. But I would say that it is harder to see them coming, like, imminent. You know, there was a time where I could envision that a country's failing economy, if it was a catastrophic failure, that it would be propped up in some significant part by Bitcoin. Now, that could still happen, but I don't think that it is the sort of go-to move that a lot of people used to think it was, if that makes sense. You know, like, I think that people are much more wary about it.
Look, there's only two types of people who can buy Bitcoin. The only way the price can go up is if people buy it. And that's either institutional buyers or individual, let's call them retail buyers. And I think you and I both would agree, we don't really understand the institutional buyers very well.
Yeah, that's part of our problem.
Well, I think that's part of everyone's problem. It's a black hole. And clearly the institutional buyers are not piling on and buying because the price is flat to slightly down over the last 6 months.
Sure.
So I don't know what the hell is going on over there. But when I look at the retail buyers, who are the ones I can understand, because that's me and you, right?
Yeah.
The Jays and Aarons of the world. Either you bought in before the bull run and subsequent crash, in which case your position's probably pretty good right now, but I don't see why you'd really want to be piling on it right now. Like, your original position's probably better. Everyone would know this except me, the person who thought you should pile on a position above $10,000.
Yeah.
But everyone else would know that's stupid. Or you bought during that massive upswing, in which case you're probably fucked, and you bought... If you're lucky, you bought around where we are now at 6,500. More likely, you bought above that and are now underwater. You're definitely not buying any more Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Or you're someone who came in after this whole thing. But I feel like if you're that person, you're sitting there going, is this a good time to buy? And no one's telling you it's a good time to buy anymore.
Like, yeah,
I don't see those people on Reddit who are like, you have to buy now.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that the number of people who are coming to Bitcoin now is probably pretty small.
I mean, when they're choosing, like, should I do this or just buy some weed stocks? Yeah. Or just some weed?
I think buying weed stocks at this point is probably way more fun and speculative and hopeful. So I think,
I liked your tokenized SoundCloud rapper thing, though. Let's keep an eye out for that, because I think the idea that people just want to invest in whatever they think is like going to appreciate is there. And if anything, maybe the crypto era kind of gave people that bug that they could make small investments in whatever it was. And once you've got that bug, I can see going a lot beyond blockchain investing with it.
Yeah, I mean, micro-investing is a thing, right? Like where, I mean, it's not as much of a thing as it was before. But,
well, it's legally dubious. I mean, the American government would prefer people who are not accredited not do that.
Yeah.
So, like everything else in crypto, the real innovation is doing something that would otherwise be illegal.
I don't know, but I do think that that type of model is definitely catching on. I mean, you can argue that, you know, it'll fail eventually, but, you know, people, even in our field, are moving to Patreon with some success. I mean, I subscribe to a couple Patreons now, which I never thought I would do.
I got a nice note from our friend, No Coiner patient number zero, Adrian Chen. He's got a newsletter over there on Substack, which is a subscription newsletter service. So everyone go subscribe to that.
Oh, he started
Adrian
his.
Chen.
Oh, okay.
Huh. Yeah.
He didn't tell me. I talked to Adrian every day. I will show his back.
We gotta get him back on the show here to spread his lies. I feel like Adrian could re-jumpstart the market, because usually when he starts talking shit about Bitcoin, the bulls awaken.
Yeah, that's true.
So
we should get him an op-ed at the Times, so you can write another No-Coiner article.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But like this whole idea that you can buy into whatever it is that you believe in or you think is going to appreciate, it suggests this future in which you could have a portfolio that's like Bitcoin and like housing in Northwestern Philadelphia and this rapper.
Yeah,
and
that sounds like a little bit of each of those markets. It seems
I think so too. Well, and maybe that's the ultimate goal. Maybe that's where the blockchain and all of this token stuff should go. Instead of tokenizing things that are obviously nonsense, if you tokenized like real estate in some American city that I thought was going to come back up, Detroit real estate, I'd be a little interested in that if I thought it was
all right. Some people have tried to do things like that. Like some of the ICOs were like about buying shares in artists and stuff like that, but it was all nonsense. I mean, can you imagine, like, 5 years ago, if you had bought an ETF of all teenage white rappers with face tattoos? Like, you would be so rich right now, and it would be so fun. Like, every song that came out would be amazing. You'd be like, I'm making more money on my face tattoo white teenage ETF. Like, I don't know. I'm for this, but, I mean, I don't know if the blockchain is really necessary for this either.
Okay, can I talk about, to tie this show up, I want to talk about two sponsored Instagram posts that came through my feed today.
Okay, tell me.
The first one was for a car company called Fair, in which you can rent, you can buy a car, or I guess lease a car, But instead of a 3-year obligation, whatever, it's just, you just pay by the month.
Oh yeah, they have that. I mean, that must be like an app-based version of some stuff that people do in LA on Craigslist. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like you use it till you're done with it. And they're like, we have enough people that we can just recirculate this. We have the proper liquidity in the car market to just keep this whole thing running.
Yeah, that's a smart idea. I mean,
it's a smart idea, and it suggests that the missing ingredient, which I guess is the app and the large pool of people, that once you do that, you can start moving seamlessly in that way. And that does remind me a little bit of the token conversation we're having, which is some of these things can be made more efficient through things like group ownership and massively dividable expense and benefit. And, you know, I just imagine when we have self-driving cars, maybe I'm going to rent out my self-driving car and it's going to drive to Atlantic City and start driving people around a little bit and get some tokens for me and then drive back.
I guess that sounds terrible, but yeah.
That would probably be driving you to Atlantic City.
There's a bus and they give you $25 voucher when you get off. You would need a slots voucher that your car, self-driving car, just prints out every time it drops people off at the Borgata.
And the self-driving car will actually play poker for you. You just give it some basic laws, teach it Doyle Brunson techniques, and then let it play for you while you go get food.
That sounds terrible.
Okay, second Instagram ad. You and I decided that we were not going to talk about the Civil token on this show, which I applaud that decision. We know people in that world who are involved in it. I don't think it makes sense for us to talk about it. It's friends.
There's just nothing that we could say that would be
incredible. And we don't have anything to say. Yeah. I think Joshua Benton has been doing a good job of covering it over at Neiman Labs. So if you're interested, recommend you go check out his writing about it. And which has lots of tweets and other people talking about it inside it. But me and you were doing the itinerary for today's show and we mentioned Civil. 30 seconds later, I got a sponsored Civil token ad in my Instagram feed.
Oh, really?
First question is, what the hell? Are we being monitored?
Yeah, of course we're being monitored. I mean,
but we had that conversation on Telegram, which is supposed to be secure.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you, but
I guess I was probably already the exact market for Civil anyway, which is New York City journalist interested person.
But you probably also put it in your Google and stuff like that. I mean,
it popped up right after we talked about it.
There's some Instagram stuff, ad stuff that is terrifying to me. Like my friend brought over a bottle of Johnny Walker. And I didn't.
We just got hammered and started buying sponsored posts.
No. Yeah, exactly. But I had an ad for Johnny Walker the next day. And I was like, I don't really drink that, you know?
I'm already drunk. What do you want from me?
I've never typed the words Johnny Walker in anything. And it was the day after my friend brought over a bottle. And we didn't even really talk about it. So it couldn't even be a mic thing. I was just like, oh, thank you. And that was it. So it's just weird.
I'll tell you exactly what my experience with this Civil token Instagram ad was. It's the image is a bunch of men at war, investigate war journalism kind of image. And it just says, you can now buy the CVL token with US dollars. Doesn't say anything about journalism. Doesn't say anything about what it does. It just says token US dollars.
Oh, you can. Well, that is a helpful ad. I didn't even know that. So you don't have to do 15 MetaMask transactions.
Yeah, they were going to come up. I won't bait us into talking about it, but they were going to come up short when they were only accepting Ethereum, and they figured out some way to take U.S. dollars.
Legally?
The people I know who are interested in the regulatory stuff have said, that sounds kind of dicey to me, but hell, lots of stuff seems kind of dicey in crypto world. You can buy it with US dollars, not saying you should. None of this is investment advice, but it was the first time I've ever gotten a targeted buy crypto with US dollars ad of this kind for something I recognized and had kind of been talking about, you know, had kind of been pumping through
good.
My Gmail filter.
I don't know. I guess that's good for civil if it's working, you know. I mean, you are the target audience.
Yeah. But it's just a little strange. I'll say it's weird when you see a token and it has to be explained in one sentence. It's a strange way to see it.
Well, I mean, the question that I had was that Popula, which is the magazine that was started by our friend and former guest Maria Bastillos, like they
which had a great article this week from Sarah.
Yeah,
Miller.
They had an article by a writer who I've always liked, Sarah Miller, who I think is funny, and you know it's very hard to be funny. But also, you know, it was an article that really was written with a lot of emotion and a lot of, like, heart, which is also really rare. I really liked it. But, like, more importantly for Civil, like, this was a huge hit. You know, it was trending on Twitter. It was a Twitter moment. Like, they must have gotten hundreds of thousands of hits to Popula. And I guess my question was just that, like, well, what does that mean? Like, you and I know what that means for a, you know, ad-based publication, which is not much, you know? But does that mean more?
I mean,
does
I was
going to
make a joke
Civil?
About 17 cents and tips, but that would be a low blow because I have no idea. It's not, the underlying economics are not exposed.
Yeah.
And nor do I even really understand in a best case scenario, how they're supposed to work. So I don't know. Let's come back to it. Look, if we learn something interesting that we can contribute to the understanding of this, we'll say it. Otherwise, we'll just like keep our eye on it. But
yeah,
read that article.
In the meantime,
no reason
read the
not
article.
To.
It was very good.
Yeah. I'll say you don't have to believe in the token scheme to enjoy the journalism.
Yeah, yeah,
which
and I was
rare
happy.
Compared to many other tokens. It's not like when I bought that weird like electrical power grid token.
Power.
I got to like.
How many times
yeah,
did
to,
you and
like,
I buy and sell
push power?
I bet the number is like over 20 because I think I individually bought and sold it at least 10 times. And I think
absolutely.
You did maybe more than I did.
So. Absolutely, and we didn't get anything out
we
of it. We never got to play
it.
With it and anything like that.
It's fucking
so,
terrible.
At least the people who invested in the Civil token can go read this. Although it was a little strange. I kind of expected there to be some sort of a wall or something. I mean, if you came across this on the internet, I don't think you would know that you were on a site that was a Ethereum derivative newsroom. You know?
No.
Like, I would just sort of be like, that's an article.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean it couldn't have been bad for them, I mean, but...
No.
I am
no.
curious
I mean,
as to, like, what a article... Like, for Gawker, it was always really clear, you know, like, they had convertibility and all the writers knew it, and I wonder if there's anything close to that for Popula or any of these civil outlets. I imagine there isn't because it's all so new, but, you know, it was actually a very good moment for them. Because you know they produced something that was good, or they produced something that was popular, and that's very hard.
Okay, Jay, when you come back, I'm looking for a Harry Potter robe, double XL.
Yeah,
Halloween's coming up.
What do you want? Like, I'm definitely not
some
going to
beer.
Harry Potter world, but maybe they'll have it in the airport.
Now you're talking. Enjoy yourself in Orlando. I have a feeling. Okay, I'm gonna call my shot here. I'm gonna call my bank. I think between here and January 1st, some crazy stuff is gonna happen in crypto. We are gearing up towards a difficulty readjustment. Historically, the ends of years have been where things start really going crazy. So I think this show is going to be pretty interesting to listen to coming into this winter.
Yeah,
I'm not just shilling our own bag.
It's okay to shill our own podcast bag, but
actually,
I agree.
Will say
I agree
this
you.
Might be interesting to the listeners. Our traffic went way up during the bull run and crashed with Bitcoin, and it's starting to build up again.
Oh,
might be a buy sign. Might be
all
a buy sign
all
from
right.
Okan.
The great podcast indicator. Is,
yeah,
is
the
firing.
The I should sell this as like proprietary data where you pay like $100 a year and I just give you our weekly podcast traffic as a possible bull sign.
You do like a screenshot of our like Apple downloads number.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Tuesday, October 2nd at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $6,500.
Thanks to everyone who's been listening and pumping up our downloads number, which clearly is how the market gets re-stimulated. Thanks to everyone listening. Thanks to our editor, James Nicholson. Thank you to our friends over at Medium. You can find all of our episodes at medium.com/cointalk. That includes full transcripts. We would really appreciate if you tell friends to listen to the show. It helps spread the word to all of the crypto moderates and the crazies and anyone else who wants to come along for the ride. You can send us an email, hi@cointalk.show. We'll see you next week.